Hi, David here, and welcome back to the channel, looking at the automatic writings of the early 20th century medium James Paget. In the last video, we looked at three messages that give some insight into how people make progress in spirit, and one in particular from Helen, James Paget's wife, that showed just how rapid progress in spirit can be. In this video, we're going to look at a message Paget received from his grandmother, Anne Rollins, on March 31st, 1915. In this message, Anne describes the role of forgiveness in spirit and how essential this is to making progress by explaining the difference divine love makes to the human soul who seeks it. I have heard mediums say that you make progress in spirit by accounting for all the harmful acts you have committed against other people, and that this is done by tracking down each and every one of them so as to achieve a reconciliation, recognizing that this might take years, decades, even centuries to achieve. Yet the more I learn about spirit, the more I see that accounting for the things we have done is more to do with acknowledging them and seeking an opportunity to work off the burning sense of shame those recollections can carry with them. One difficulty with the idea of tracking down all the people we have hurt in some way is that they might not want to meet us, they might not want anything to do with us, and prefer not to be reminded of us. Does this mean we have no way forward? No, of course it doesn't. There are always new opportunities to be of service to others, and these, combined with an acknowledgement of our past actions and their effects, and time spent working and becoming a better person, do offer a way forward. In time, our awareness of the person we have become allows our recollections of past actions that shame or embarrass us to fall away from us. But this is still a slow and gradual process, important as it is that this opening is there. This is why I want to use this video to show that there is another way forward, so that instead of using the possibility of many individual acts of forgiveness, one person to another, we are able to use the possibility of forgiveness by God, so that there is no longer anything in our nature that the law of due compensation can act upon. This higher way forward is what Anne Rollins explains to her grandson, James. I am here, your grandmother. I came to write you about the forgiveness and pardon of God and to enlighten you upon this subject, which is so little understood since men first commenced to distort the teachings of the Master. Just to pause there for a second, one of the repeated themes of the Paget messages is the extent to which the original teachings of Jesus have been distorted, and just how imperfect and misleading is the record we have in the New Testament. Anne continues, forgiveness is that operation of the divine mind of God, which relieves a man of the penalties of his sins that he has committed and permits him to turn from his evil thoughts and deeds and seek the love of God. If he earnestly seeks, he will find the happiness which is waiting for him to obtain. It does not violate any law that God has established to prevent him avoiding the penalties of his violations of the laws of God controlling his conduct. The law of compensation, that what a man sows, that shall he reap, is not set aside. But in the particular case where a man becomes penitent and in all earnestness prays for God to forgive him of his sins and make a new man of him, the operation of another and greater law is called into activity. And the old law of compensation is nullified and, as it were, swallowed up in the power of this law of love and forgiveness. So Anne is telling us that the law of compensation is not set aside, but that there is a higher law which, if followed, supersedes it. Now, in British spiritualism, or more specifically within the Spiritualists National Union, there are seven principles that are followed. One of them states that there is compensation and retribution hereafter for all good and evil deeds done on earth. My issue with that particular wording is that there is nothing of retribution in God's economy. We benefit by the good we do, we suffer from the harm we do, because each of these leaves its mark upon us. There is no punishment or retribution involved. It is purely and simply that we have to own what we have done. Anne continues, "So you see, there is no setting aside of any of God's laws. As in the physical world, certain lesser laws are overcome by greater laws, so in the spirit world, or in the operation of spiritual things, the greater laws must prevail over the lesser. God's laws never change, but the application of these laws to particular facts and conditions do seem to change when two laws come into apparent conflict, and the lesser must give way to the greater. The spiritual laws are just as fixed as are the physical laws that control the material universe. And no law having application to the same condition of facts ever is different in its operation or in its effects. So in the spirit world, when a spirit has committed sins on earth, the law of compensation demands that he must pay the penalty of these sins until there has been a full expiation or until the law is satisfied. And this law does not change in its operations, and no one can avoid or run away from the inexorable demands of the law. He cannot of himself abate one jot or tittle of the penalties, but must pay to the last farthing, as the master said, and hence he cannot of himself hope to change the operation of this law. Now, as the creator of all law has provided another and higher law, which, under certain conditions, may be brought into operation and causes the former law to cease to operate, man may experience the benefit of the workings of this higher law. So when God forgives a man of his sins and makes him a new creature in his nature and love, he does not, for the particular case, annihilate the law of compensation, but removes that upon which this law may operate. If the things we have done are things we can look upon with happiness, satisfaction, joy, then these are what they bring us. If the things we have done are things we can only look upon with regret, pain, sadness, embarrassment, then these are what they bring us. It's less about compensation and retribution than a law of due consequence, or compensation in the sense of appropriate reward, good or bad. What Anne Rollins is telling us is that this law always applies, but that there is a higher law of love, which, when brought into operation, transforms us so that the things upon which the law of compensation might operate no longer form part of us. Anne continues, "Sin is violation of God's law, and the effect of sin is the penalty which such violation imposes." It's worth seeing here that a consistent theme in the Paget messages is that there is nothing inherently sinful about human beings, and to teach that there is itself damaging, and something that will have to be accounted for. In the Paget messages, sin is simply a way of referring to the inharmonious choices that we make that leave us facing uncomfortable consequences. As Anne says, a man's suffering for sins committed is not the result of God's special condemnation in each particular case, but is the result of the workings and scourgings of his conscience and recollections. And as long as conscience works, he will suffer. And the greater the sins committed, the greater will be the suffering. Now, this implies that a man's soul is filled to a greater or lesser extent with these memories, which for the time constitute his very existence. He lives with these memories, and the suffering and torment which result from them can never leave him until the memories of these sins, or the result of them, cease to be a part of himself and his constant companions. This is the inexorable law of compensation, and man of himself has no way of escaping this law except by his long expiation, which removes these memories and satisfies the law. Man cannot change this law, and God will not. So as I say, the law never changes, and remember this fact, that in order for the law to operate, a man must have these memories, and they must be a part of his very existence. What Anne is telling us is that in order for the law of compensation to operate, we must have some memory or recollection of the things we have done. Putting it another way, they must still be part of us, part of our nature. Putting it like that, it seems obvious that this must be true, but the point of saying this is to get us thinking about the possibility that there might be a way we can lose these recollections so that they are no longer part of us. We've already looked at how this can be done by acknowledging and working through painful memories, either by meeting those we have injured, so the pain can be released for both, or through some other form of service, striving to become a better person by way of working through these memories. But Anne Rollins wants to tell us of another way. God's love is the greatest thing in all the universe, and the law of love is the greatest law. Every other law is subordinate to it and must work in unison with it. This love frees man from all law, and when man possesses this love, he is slave to no law and is free indeed. Therefore, the law of compensation and all laws not in harmony with the law of love have nothing upon which to operate. In that man's case, meaning a man who possesses divine love, God's laws are not changed, but merely, as to this man, have no existence. Now, let all men, wise and unwise, know that God, in his love and wisdom, has provided a means by which man, if he so will, may escape the unchanging law of compensation and become no longer subject to its demands and penalties. The means is simple and easy, and within the comprehension and grasp of every living soul, be he saint or sinner, a wise man or an ignorant one. Anne Rollins is telling us that when we are possessed of divine love, its effect on us is such that there is no longer anything in us to which the law of compensation might apply. This is to say that our nature is transformed and we are no longer as we were. She tells us that the means by which we can possess divine love is simple and easy and within the comprehension and grasp of every living soul. And that intellect, in the sense of being learned, is not involved. For the man who knows that God exists and provides him with food and raiment as the result of his daily toil, as well as the great intellectual scientist or philosopher, may learn the way to these redeeming truths. I do not mean that a man, by the mere exercise of mental powers, may receive the benefit of this great provision for his redemption. The soul must seek, and it will find, and the soul of the wise may not be as capable of receiving as the soul of the ignorant. Anne here uses the word ignorant simply in the sense of unknowing. There's no judgment implied. She tells us that the way to divine love is not a matter of intellect or of mental belief. When we stop and think about it, this makes sense. Imagine the man who falls in love and is so open to that love that he is constantly enchanted by everything about the other person and just wants to see them flourish in whatever ways that might take them both. Imagine another man who falls in love, but has a head full of beliefs, expectations, or preconceptions as to the kind of role his beloved should fulfil in his life, behave towards him, or what path his beloved's life should take as his partner. Then think about which of these two is going to enjoy the fuller, more open and unimpeded experience of love. Human intellect is a valuable tool, but when it comes to love, it can just get in the way. And the natural love of humans isn't always strong enough to overcome this obstacle, simply because we have a free choice as to whether or not we give priority to love. And our choices are often driven by our intellect or mental beliefs, rather than by what we know at the soul level. Anne Rollins explains this by saying, man has a natural love, but this natural love is not sufficient to enable him to find these great means that I speak of. Only the love of God can, and he is willing that all men should have this love. It is free and waiting to be bestowed upon all, and strange as it may seem, God will not, and I might say cannot, bestow this love unless man seeks for it and asks for it in earnestness and faith. The will of man is a wonderful thing, but it stands between him and this love if he fails to exercise his will in seeking for it. No man can secure it against his will. What a wonderful thing is man's will, and how he should study it and learn what a great part of his being it is. So even God doesn't force divine love on us, respecting the free will that is itself a God-given attribute of the human soul. For God to impose divine love on us would be to turn a gift into an imposition, an exercise of force. And divine love doesn't work that way. The love of God comes only into a man's soul when he seeks it in prayer and faith. And of course, this implies that he wills it to come to him. No man is ever refused this love when he properly asks for it. This love is a part of the divine essence, and when a man possesses it in sufficient abundance, he becomes a part of divinity itself. And in the divine, there is no sin or error. And consequently, when he becomes a part of this divinity, no sin or error can form a part of his being. These are important words. Divine love is a part of the divine essence, literally the substance of God, which every human soul can share. From one so transformed, nothing but good can come forth. In saying this, Anne Rollins is not using a metaphor. She is trying as best she can with words to describe an observable truth capable of being experienced. In the same way she might describe gravitational force or the effect upon the physical body of ingesting a particular food. Divine love is food for the soul. When ingested, it changes the soul from the mortal to the divine, so that there is nothing left for the law of compensation to apply to. Anne explains, now, as I have said, a man who is without this love has his memories of sin and evil deeds, and under the law of compensation must pay the penalties. Yet when this love comes into his soul, it leaves no room for these memories. And as he becomes more and more filled with this love, these memories disappear, and only this love inhabits his soul, as it were. Hence, there remains nothing in him upon which this law can operate, and the man is no longer its slave or subject. This love is sufficient of itself to cleanse the soul from all sin and error, and make man one with God. Perfect love casts out more than just fear. It leaves no room even for the consequences of our past fears. Anne goes on to tell us that she knows this not as something she has been taught, but as a matter of experience. I know by personal experience that this forgiveness is a real, actual, existing thing. And when God forgives, sin disappears, and only love exists. And that love, in its fullness, is the fulfilling of the law. So let men know that God does forgive sin, and when he forgives, the penalty disappears. And when it disappears as the result of such forgiveness, no law of God is changed or violated. Teaching this was the great mission of Jesus when he came to earth. And before he came and taught his great truth, the forgiveness of sin was not understood, even by the Hebrew teachers. For their doctrine was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. God's love, as I have described, was not known or sought for. Only the care and protection and material benefits that God might give to the Hebrews. My dear son, I have written you a long communication, but there is sufficient in it for men to think of and meditate upon. And if they do so and open their souls to the divine influence, they will know that God can forgive sin and save men from its penalties, so that they will not have to undergo the long period of expiation, which in their natural state, the law of compensation demands. So without writing further, I will say that I love you with all my heart and soul, and pray that God will give you this great love in all its abundance. Your loving grandmother, Anne Rollins. I think that of all the videos I've done so far, this is easily the most important. And the teaching contained in this message from Anne Rollins is something we're going to be exploring much more in the months ahead. The thing I really do want to emphasise is that the teaching of divine love that James Paget's grandmother, Anne Rollins, has set out for us is not just intended as something interesting. It is a route map for the soul, the real you. Whatever you conceive God to be is far less important than simply knowing that God is a spirit whose substance is something that in the Paget messages is called divine love. And that this is there for the taking, for the asking, freely given and without measure. There is no need for an intermediary between you and God. Indeed, there is no room for an intermediary between you and God. What is on offer is a direct sharing. A direct sharing is the only way to share in divine love. You cannot benefit from someone else's sharing in divine love, save that they can stand before you as an example of what is possible. This is a teaching for you to explore for yourself. It is a teaching you can only come to know if you explore it for yourself. It is a teaching you can only show others if you explore it for yourself. And with that, I will leave you to get started or add to the progress you've already made. As always, this video is available as a podcast, and I would encourage you to use the written transcript uploaded to my Medium account to reflect on these words. Links are in the video description below. In the next video, we're going to look at a message from a cousin of James Paget, who is not in a good place, having passed to spirit. And that's going to let us see the effect on someone of taking this teaching of divine love to heart. So I hope you'll join me for that. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed this video, do please like it and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already, as it does help to introduce it to others. And make sure you click on the bell icon so you get notified when the next video is uploaded. In the meantime, as always, thank you for watching, and I'll see you soon. Take care.